Today's show, we look at the conference games we are most excited about, and there are a plethora of them. What's the worst stadium in college football, and is it the Junkyard in Amherst, Massachusetts? USC's recruiting's not going well, and we tell you what they use Brian Denny Stadium allegedly for sometimes.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
That is a horrendous pick.
Russ Dellinger.
He moves on like he's going from second to third grade.
And SI's Pat Forty.
Do you sell concessions at the funeral?
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. Hope you all had a great July 4th. July 4th weekend. Season is coming. It's getting closer. We welcome back all you wayward souls that stopped listening in the spring. It's now officially preseason, I feel.
Should never stop listening, but we'll always take you back.
We'll welcome you back, but we're a little disappointed in a few of you. But we did a thing a couple weeks ago on our favorite non-conference games of the season that we're most excited about or think are going to be the most monumental, think are going to be the most important, anticipated, historic, whatever. I wanted to do it with conference games since now there's a lot less non-conference games that are exciting because they're all playing each other in conference. And so we can do a little draft like we usually do. I'll let Pat go first. He needs all the help. He's kind of the Detroit Pistons of this podcast.
Please.
Lottery pick every year.
Uh-huh.
What do you got, Pat? What is the game you are most excited about for this upcoming season? In conference only.
Yeah. Well, as a decided non-fan of the realignment that has occurred, I nevertheless am excited by a lot of the matchups that they're producing. So there's a little bit of conflict there, but just in terms of like brand on brand that you would never expect to be a conference game, USC at Michigan, September 21st. Trojans going into the Big House. I think that's their opener in the Big Ten. Pretty splashy opener for your first game in the league. It's been interesting. Some leagues have kind of low-keyed the first game for their new teams, but not that one, not in the Big Ten. USC opens their LSU in Vegas, and 3 weeks later, they are Michigan in the Big House. And then they've also, of course, got Penn State and Notre Dame and Washington, their schedules. And Wisconsin as well. So there's a lot going on that schedule. But I am excited to see the Trojans go into Ann Arbor September 21st.
All right. I'm going to stop here before we get to that. Is a horrendous pick.
What?
USC Michigan? USC Michigan is the most exciting conference game you've got. I said you're like the Pistons. I was joking. Don't pick like them.
What is wrong with USC at Michigan?
That's the most exciting of all the games. Terrible pick.
Yeah.
Terrible pick. Go ahead, Ross.
The crowd boos for
good. I mean, it's fine.
Getting savaged here for taking the defending national champions against the biggest brand that's actually moving in that conference.
Don't worry,
round pick.
Ross, we'll take advantage of this miss and draft what I believe to be the top conference game of the season, which is Georgia at Texas. We talked about it before. I think when I was visiting Austin last week, we talked a little bit about this game and the insanity that will unfold in Austin around it. The day after the game is the F1 racing car race there in Austin. But this is obviously my picks are going to drift toward, you know, the new matchups, conference matchups, and certainly this is not only a new conference matchup, but one between two teams that are, you know, national championship type of caliber this year, projections and, you know, in rankings inside the top five to start the year. So, yeah, this is one I got my eye on. It's October 19th in Austin, Texas. So there you go, Pat. Thanks for that.
Yeah, new conference matchups. Jeez, what an idea. I'm pretty sure USC Michigan's a new conference matchup.
Yeah, that's true.
Good gravy. I'm attacked right out of the box.
Listen, the pod was off to a slow start. I had to spice things up.
There you go.
Off the top rope. Much better pick by Ross.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Well, I mean, if you're excited to watch the number 12 versus number 19 teams in the country play each other, Pat, knock yourself.
By the middle of October, whenever Georgia and Texas play, Texas is going to be old hat in the SEC. September 21st, first game in the Big Ten for USC. Come on.
I'm turning this into a snake draft, by the way. Because it's my point. I have a point for both of these two picks, okay? If you want the most,
like Rutgers, Maryland or something?
Yeah. The most exciting game for those two teams two of the teams you mentioned, Texas and Michigan. Texas, the one I want to see most is when they got to go to A&M. That's true hate, spite. There could be casualties. We've been waiting 10 years for this. They tried to block it. They negotiated to host it. This is going to be monumental, historic. Everyone's going to remember when the rivalry is renewed. I don't even care what their records are. Texas at A&M, I'm more interested in that Texas game even than the Georgia game. But I totally get the Georgia thing because it's a potential national championship game matchup, right? If you want Michigan, the most anticipated game, the most interesting game is Ohio State. It always is Ohio State. They've beaten them three straight times. Beat the Buckeyes three straight times. Ohio State is loaded. They are built to beat Michigan this year. This will be enormous pressure on Ohio State to defeat Michigan. They could win. Their fans would certainly take a national championship with a loss to Michigan, but it wouldn't quite be as sweet. They absolutely have to win that game. And Michigan's sort of sitting there now, well, we got our title. And they got this killer defense, and maybe by the end of the year, they got a good enough offense to go down there and literally just drive another stake into the heart of Ohio State. Those two games, to me, I like bitterness. I like anger. I like rivalry. Those two games are more interesting, certainly, than, hey, USC's here.
It's a long time.
Much better.
That's the end of the regular season. You're talking like 9 years down the road.
This is the regular season games. I am getting an A-plus draft grade. The draft gurus are going to give me an A.
Given out by yourself. Okay.
Fine. I snake draft that. I will take Texas A&M, the end of the first round, Michigan, Ohio State, as a value pick in the second round. A second round. I got Ohio State, Michigan in the second round. Snake draft.
USC,
back to you.
USC and Michigan have played each other on campus twice ever, the last one being 1958. Their only other meetings have been in the Rose Bowl. They never go to each other's campuses.
Ohio and Michigan had a war against each other. A war. And they also had the 10-year war. Oh, and I got some crap from the guys at University of Toledo Athletic Department for cracking about whether who really won that war since Ohio got Toledo. I hear you, Rockets. I got messages. Toledo was not happy with me.
Well. Somebody's got to be mad at us. At all
it's
times.
Tough when they're hated in Toledo. It's a tough day. Pat Ross, second round pick. Go ahead. Pat's got to sit there and wallow in his miserable
pick. Yeah, we're doing snake. Okay.
Yeah, snake draft now.
Yeah. So, how about this one? Ohio State at Oregon, October 12th. Ohio State at Oregon. If you run down, well, obviously we know a lot about Ohio State, right? I mean, probably have the most. But possibly the most talented roster in football this year, certainly the most talented probably transfer portal class, spending just about as much on their classes as any other team. We know about the expectations on Ryan Day, all that stuff. If you look at their schedule, right, they should certainly go into this game at 5-0, barring some surprise that they would get upset by Iowa. But I don't expect that. So this should be a 5-0 schedule. If you look at the rest of their schedule, I mean, they're at Penn State, and obviously they host Michigan. But outside of that, this is maybe this is the toughest game on their schedule at Oregon on October 12th. So pencil that one in. Obviously, Dan Lanning has been building something there, kind of taking what Mario Cristobal did as far as constructing, especially on the lines, a team that would resemble some of the Ohio State teams, some of the Georgia-type Alabama teams. So that is going to be a whopper of a game, and one that probably the winner, you know, you feel like is still in the national championship race, and while the loser could still make the playoff in an expanded field, certainly it feels like a semifinal. You know, it feels like a college football playoff semifinal. So looking forward to that one.
Yes, I am all in favor of the new matchups, which are exciting to me. And so my second round pick, after being absolutely assaulted on the first
poor,
one.
Poor Pat.
Good Lord. Alabama at Oklahoma, November 23rd. There could be a lot of implications there. Both teams you would expect to be in the playoff picture at that point. But maybe not the best in the SEC. We'll see. Bama and Oklahoma have only played six times, and four of them have been in bowl games. They've only played on each other's campus one time each. So the first time the Crimson Tide goes into Norman, that should be quite an atmosphere there. And it's the middle game of a three-game gauntlet to close for Oklahoma that is a whopper. At Missouri, then they have a week off, but then host Alabama, then at LSU. I mean, that is a challenge. That ain't a Big 12 schedule right there. Missouri, of course, has played Oklahoma 9 million times and will be very excited to have the Sooners back on their campus. And then Bama again showing up, and, you know, that'll probably be a top 15, maybe top 10 matchup. And then LSU, November 30th is, you know, Oklahoma kind of slotting into what had been the Texas A&M spot for LSU at the end of the regular season there. So we'll see. There could be a lot of implications for all three of those games.
You get two picks. No, Rob, you get two picks, don't you? We're doing very well. We can't even – this is how bad this spot is. We can't run a three-man snake draft.
It's a July 4th hangover, Dan.
That's,
you know,
it's been
everybody
so
at work this morning
on.
is they're trying to feel about. Their face.
I don't know who you're talking about.
All right. Again, I'm sticking with new, sticking with games I think that could be the beginnings of some interesting new clashes and that could end up mattering quite a bit eventually. Utah at Oklahoma State. Let's get a little new Big 12 love in there. September 21st in Stillwater. Utes are the preseason pick in the Big 12. Oklahoma State should be very good, although Ollie Gordon just got popped for suspicion of DUI. He's their, you know, top 10 Heisman vote getter from last year at running back. But, you know, Oklahoma State, this is one of those years where, you know, the expectations ebb and flow with them, and they always seem to run kind of counter to the expectations. So we'll see if they can live up to pretty high expectations there. But I think that league, you're looking at Utah, Oklahoma State, Kansas State, all could be in the mix there. Heck, who knows? Iowa State, a lot of schools could end up jumping up, I think, into the picture there. That's usually the way the Big 12 plays out. They're looking at probably their fifth different conference champion in the last 5 years this year. So I think that game will kick off a pretty wild Big 12 free-for-all, I think. Utah, Oklahoma State, Stillwater, September 21st.
Well, let's get into some maybe traditional matchups, conference matchups, and not none of this new stuff. How about Georgia, Alabama? They play in the regular season for the first time in maybe since 2020, the famous Nick Saban COVID game where he missed he came back right before the game. He was cleared right before the game. This is Kalen DeBoer's first conference game as Alabama's football coach. So welcome to the SEC. Welcome to the Alabama by getting Georgia. Obviously, the Alabama has had Georgia's number quite a bit lately. Nick Saban dominated Kirby Smart in most of their games, and they usually play, it seems like, in Atlanta. They've played in Atlanta like, I think it's like six times in the last 10 years or so, with Alabama winning, I think, all of them. You know, and the Georgia obviously won the championship game in 2022. But this one, this is the first real big test for Kalen DeBoer. Now, the week before, they do go at Wisconsin. That's not the greatest setup of a schedule. Alabama has to go at Wisconsin the week before that game. So
it's actually 2 weeks. There's a bye in between.
Oh, is there a bye in between? Ah, yep. Okay. Yep. Well, that makes a lot of sense. That makes more sense then. Yep. But yeah, this is an early season, September 28th. Welcome to the SEC game here for Kalen DeBoer. Should be interesting.
Every time Alabama beats Georgia, Keely Ringo becomes more popular in the state of Georgia. Because if he doesn't have that pick six and they somehow lose that game, oh my goodness, it would be bleak.
Let's take a moment. It is amazing how many good games there are. And I know this is why we had to go through conference realignment, because TV wanted to set all these things up, because they're going to get higher ratings. And we have bemoaned and pointed out the displeasurable parts, but the fact of all these teams playing each other now is astounding. I mean, this Georgia schedule is Clemson in Atlanta. They get Tennessee Tech at home. I'm sorry. At Kentucky, at Alabama, Auburn at home, Mississippi State at home, at Texas. Then they get the cocktail party against Florida. And then the game I'm going to pick right now, at Ole Miss. Then they get Tennessee, and then UMass and Georgia Tech. But I'm going to take the Ole Miss game. I am highly anticipating this because Georgia obviously is the litmus test in the SEC, and Ole Miss has got as good of a team on paper as we can call in memory. I don't know, right? I don't know. It's as good as it gets for Ole Miss. This is the big year. They got a lot of talent. They got a lot of expectations. The game is until November 9th. But for Ole Miss, it is a chance, if they're still rolling along, as anticipated, this could be playoffs on the line, legitimacy on the line, just a chance to beat Georgia on the line against a Georgia team that could be absolutely ridiculously cruising or could be a little beat up from that schedule and could very well need to win this game. Because you're going to go through that gauntlet undefeated. So I'm going to take Georgia at Ole Miss on November 9th to close out round three. And then in round – go ahead. You got thoughts on that?
I would say Georgia has like 7 slobber knockers in their first 10 games. I mean, tough games, big emotional games. I'm not sure Florida's going to be that good, but it's Florida. It's a cocktail party. It's a rivalry. Got to be ready. Clemson, at Kentucky, at Alabama, at Texas, at Ole Miss, and then Tennessee's November 16th. I mean, that is a heck of a gauntlet. And they do kind of back into the postseason there with the 2 non-conference games at the end against UMass and Georgia Tech. But still, man, they have great depth at Georgia, but it will be tested, I think, through those first 10 games.
Well, we talked a lot about the expanded playoff in the SEC or Big Ten having to getting a 3-loss team into the playoff potentially as like one of the last at large. You know, not to say that Georgia's going to lose 3 games, but when you look at their schedule and think about the SEC championship game too, and if they do lose 3 games, that would be a prime candidate, right? The 2-time national champion over the last 3 years to get in to the playoff with 3 losses. That would be one of the ones, one of the teams that probably can do it. It's quite loaded. Yeah, it's pretty stacked. I thought Florida's schedule was one of the toughest in the country. I think it still is, but that is I didn't realize how much that Georgia has on the plate there.
Well, do you remember the was it maybe it was 2020 to Georgia. I'm looking at that schedule. They played Oregon in the opener. And then it was Samford, South Carolina, Kent State, Mizzou, Auburn, Vanderbilt, Florida, Tennessee, who was pretty good at that point. And then at Miss State, Kentucky, Georgia Tech. That was it. That was their schedule. And it's a little like Michigan's last year. Like, it was like September 10th, and you're like, okay, they don't play a meaningful game for 6 weeks, 8 weeks, maybe the whole season. And like last year with Michigan, it was like, okay, call me when the Penn State game shows up in late November. That stuff ain't happening anymore.
No, that's true. That's true. You cannot cruise through 2 months of the season in the Big Ten or SEC right now.
Yeah. You got to earn it now. And you're going to play a lot of really big games. And so you're going to have to get used to losing some of these games. It's no longer just this concept of, well, there's this dominant team in this conference. Now the conferences have merged, and you're going to have to play each other a lot sooner and getting rid of the divisions and all that. My fourth round, can we just do four rounds? I don't know. Clemson at Florida State, October 5th. I'll go ACC.
Took mine.
Florida State has Florida State ready to regrasp, fully control this conference over Clemson. We'll see. How good is Clemson? What do they got? This entire season is a referendum on how Coach Sweeney's doing it. And Florida State, obviously, incredible season last year, ended great disappointment, but an incredible season. And where's Mike Norvell got it? So much drama on the line in that one for ACC supremacy. So Clemson at Florida State, you know that one's going to be at night. Or better be. And that's a huge game.
I'm going to go with an odd one, Missouri at Alabama. And I'll tell you, I think, why I'm going with this one. I think if you look at Missouri's schedule, you know, it's got one of the more favorable schedules in the SEC, if you can have a favorable schedule in the SEC. And it kind of sets up, if they can get through Alabama, for them actually to go undefeated and certainly to play in the SEC, potentially SEC championship game. They do got to go to College Station, but they're kind of rebuilding there. They host Auburn. They host Oklahoma. Outside of that, I don't see a ton of difficulty actually. And so if they can get through Alabama, man, it sets up really good for Missouri. If you breeze through Missouri's schedule, they play a lot of programs that are a lot isn't necessarily expected, right? That they're under like Texas A&M, right? So I know that's at Aggieland, but the schedule kind of sets up pretty well. And I think this game, you know, you're probably going to have an afternoon night kickoff there in Tuscaloosa, so certainly it could be a difficult environment. We saw what Missouri did last year, and Eli Drinkwitz seems to have it going. So look out for the Tigers. That's a big game against Alabama, October 26th in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, the schedule really does set up well for Missouri. The SEC gave them a solid there, and it does dovetail with the point where the program's in very, very good shape. They've got some holes to fill defensively, but that should be an elite offense, and I think Missouri's like Mississippi. This is your chance, kind of, to really jump up, have a playoff-caliber team in a year where they're taking 12 to the playoff. This is a golden opportunity. All right, my last pick after being maligned, assaulted, insulted, attacked for much of this podcast already. This is a trap game, the quintessential potential trap game on the schedule. Again, looking at new matchups here. Florida State at SMU, and it's the week before Florida State plays Clemson. So don't look ahead, Seminoles, because SMU is going to be pretty sneaky good, I think. They got Preston Stone back from as quarterback for a team that was, 10-3, 11-3, I think, last year. Won the ACC. And here's how it sets up for SMU. You go Nevada on August 24th, so the first week, you know, the week zero. Houston Christian. Then you host BYU. If you beat BYU, you get 2 weeks off, and then you play the Iron Skillet game against TCU. Take care of business there and welcome in the Seminoles. And the Seminoles better be ready to go to Dallas there, because that stands out possibly. I think SMU is going to be a sneaky contender in the ACC, and that's their big show-out game against the Seminoles coming in.
This season, I'm more excited than ever. Let me just list a couple that we didn't name. Ohio State, Penn State. Alabama, Tennessee returns to that incredible scene. And, you know, what is this Tennessee season going to be? They could be 5-0 in that game. They got a tough start of the season. But what if the Vols are 5-0 and they get Alabama coming into Neyland? It's going to be crazy. Alabama, LSU, not make the list.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Ole Miss.
Too. LSU Ole Miss did not make the list. Did Michigan, Oregon, did that get mentioned or no?
No.
It did not. Okay.
Michigan, Oregon.
Yeah. Tennessee at Georgia, too.
Georgia did not make the list. The Red River did not make the list.
Yeah.
The Iron Bowl did not make the list.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is some amazing games that we didn't even get to. This is going to be a massive season.
Yeah.
This is going to be a massive season.
Look, I think you said it, Dan. This is why.
Best season ever.
When you look at conference realignment and look, I mean, I think for the majority of fans, they hated it. They hate conference realignment. I think the majority of college sports fans are, in a way, a lot like us. Like, you know, we kind of grip on to the history and the past and the pageantry of what we're used to. But we got conference realignment because of money, obviously, that goes back to TV networks. And that's all rooted in matchups. It just is. And we're seeing what we just went through of why we got the realignment. It's better in bigger matchups. And while there are many drawbacks to this, there are certainly some positives in that there's these schedules resemble like an NFL type schedule.
And we're adding 8 playoff games.
Yeah.
We had 3 playoff games last year. We have 11 this year. So, like, December and January are going to be its own entity. And we've got all of these. So, amazing. Amazing. All right. That concludes the draft. I won the draft.
Oh, okay.
We'll be back after this message. All right. We're back. Wanted to do this. We talked about the toughest places to play in the country recently. EA Sports claimed their list. They claimed analytics, math. They claimed science. We disagreed with some of them. There's a guy on social media, G-Fed. This is what is that's how he goes. I think his first name begins with a G, and then he wears a fedora sometimes. I think that might be it. I don't know why he's called G-Fed, but he's at G-Fed Go Crazy, and he does this. He does two things on his account. I've watched a lot of them. He goes to college football stadiums in the like off season or downtime and tries to sneak in and give you a tour. Finds like the gate that's not locked and gets in there. Does it with college basketball arenas, too. He also will attend a sporting event and try to be the last guy kicked out of the stadium. He'll hide out, like, in the back corner.
Really? An interesting way of finding fun in his life.
It's content. Yeah. I like it. I am a G-Fed Go Crazy fan. He recently said he's been to over 100 college football stadiums, and he recently made it to my alma mater, University of Massachusetts, this was his result of this tour, which actually went viral, because it is it's something. Over 3 million views on this one, on the walk-on challenge. He snuck in, not that it's hard to, into McGuirk Alumni Stadium in Amherst, Mass. Here is his report on his visit.
I've been to about 120 college football fields in the last year now, and I genuinely think I found the worst one. Today I am at McGurk Alumni Stadium, home of UMass. The good thing is every single gate I've seen has been open to check things out, but my lord, what is there to check out here? Two sides of straight bleacher seating that sits 17,000 people, a scoreboard in the end zone, and that's about it. The rolling hills of Massachusetts behind it does provide a nice backdrop, but the stadium doesn't do it justice at all. I'm not even seeing a real concourse here. Every section just has these rows of stairs that start from the floor and goes straight up to the seats. There is some work going on that looks like it could be adding seat backs, which would help, but is that making that better than the second worst stadium in the country? I don't know, man. Check out the outside of the stadium and just how much nothingness is going on out here. If no one was around and you told me this place was abandoned, I'd believe you. UMass just recently signed up to be in the MAC, and as a MAC alum, a MAC ambassador, someone that's been to every MAC stadium, I'm not gonna lie, I'm kind of embarrassed it took 25 years for the MAC to add anybody, and this is who we chose. I still have not ventured over to this side. Maybe this could be a little bit better. This is so far from what I was expecting this to be. This feels like a junkyard in the middle of nowhere. There is one skybox to check out, but I don't think I'm going to be able to get up there today. A really bland facility on the other side of the end zone. No idea why you wouldn't brand this one bit. But I'm not even going to try to get in here because UMass probably already hates me at this point, and it's not worth my time to get in trouble with these guys. That'll wrap up our McGurk tour. I can't believe we broke up the solidarity of the MAC conference to let these guys in. I want beef now. When the day comes, give me Western Michigan minus 40.
Tell us how you really feel.
Yeah.
G-Fed, wow, go crazy.
A junkyard.
A total destruction of your alma mater's football stadium.
How about the MAC, just MAC beef?
It's good to know there can be such a thing.
I actually think that's probably the best.
He did give a compliment of the rolling hills of Massachusetts in the background.
He did, yeah. Has anyone else been to McGurk Alumni Stadium?
Nope.
Missouri is actually playing there this year.
No.
Not in Gillette Stadium, where they usually play. They used to play some pretty big games. Mm-hmm. They're coming to McGurk Alumni.
Mizzou was an early adopter of the cost containment and scheduling philosophy of like, well, instead of paying for you guys to come to our stadium three straight times, we'll do 2-1 or whatever, where you come to us twice and then we'll go to you once and pay you less.
Well, I hope it's a sellout.
Yeah.
We need 17,000. 17. Supposedly. There's no way they've ever sold. Have they sold it out?
I was about to say, I wonder when they've last sold out a game.
17,000 seats?
Somebody probably just made that number up in the sports information.
Odessa Permian is scoffing at 17,000.
Yeah, well, this led to many of people saying my Texas high school stadium is better, of various things. We can make a list of the, if you have any others, the worst. You know, this is FBS. That's the thing. Like, there's that one, is it Houston Baptist where the CVS is at one side of the stadium so you can watch the game while filling your prescription in the pharmacy drive through. Now, points for convenience there, but I'm going to say McGurk alumni is better than that. Not much going on here. So I will say this. When I went to UMass, it was explained to me in the mid-90s that the stadium makes no sense at all. Okay. It is absolutely this weird looking stadium. And what they did was they made a footprint to build like a 45,000 seat stadium at some point, like in the 70s. But then the funding didn't come through, of course. So they just put this like temporary stadium up. That's inside, where there's the field, and then there were these just like concrete temporary seats. And then eventually they're going to build out this big stadium with concourses and locker rooms and things that you would expect a stadium to have, kind of the prerequisite for stadium.
Uh-huh.
But it never was built. And that was like 30 years ago. I hadn't been in a while, but seeing that video doesn't look like a whole lot has been put into the place.
All they had was 30 years, Dan.
What's that?
All they had was 30 years, though.
And like 30 before that.
Yeah.
So it's like
60 years. Yeah.
Yeah. It was totally embarrassing. And like, now the rolling hills of Massachusetts are beautiful. Pioneer Valley of Massachusetts is beautiful. The area around UMass, the UMass campus. There's many fantastic buildings at UMass. Beautiful brick dorms and quads and modern facilities. Go over the hockey facility and the basketball. You see much better and all that. I doubt even the chancellor or the admissions director at the University of Massachusetts would tell you that the McGuirk Alumni Stadium is... is anything but pretty terrible. Don't think they bring the tours. Campus tour doesn't stop by. I don't know what this is. But this is the problem with saying you're FBS is like this becomes the front porch of your school, right? Like 3 million people just saw this video. And they probably think that all of UMass looks like a East Warsaw, you know, municipal facility.
This is great because, you know, Dan teased on Twitter that we were going to talk about this on the pod. And I thought, oh, we might finally get some alumni pride out of Dan for his alma mater. No, he's right there with this guy trashing the stadium. So
I said the rest of the campus is nice. Listen, okay. We care about academics there at UMass, not your little football factories.
for sure.
There's a lot of nice places on campus. That isn't it. I'm a truth teller. I mean, what do you want me to do? Look at that place.
No, I know. I was counting like the 4 or 5 of the MAC stadiums, and like even I think Ball State and Northern Illinois are nicer than that one. So
I've been to every MAC campus. It's real life.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
It was a brag. UMass's campus is fantastic. Comparatively to the rest of the MAC. Miami, Ohio, very, very, very
Miami,
nice.
Ohio, very nice. Very
Ohio, nice. Very nice. Other than that, I don't think we're holding, you know, I'm not taking a backseat to anyone. Stadium, though, even by the rough stadiums of the MAC. I mean, the Glass Bowl's nice. The bowling greens, it's kind of right on the highway. It's like,
bowling green, you can like see I-75.
Yeah, it's like in the breakdown lane. But it's kind of nice.
I don't know.
It's better than this.
Well, yeah. I think your guy might be right. Everything is better than this.
Yeah.
Is Sam Houston State an FBS?
It is now, yeah.
Okay, because I've always heard that was the worst.
Okay.
Now, whether or not, maybe they and UMass should schedule a home and home.
There you go.
If you're UMass, this is more publicity than UMass football got in a while. What do you like fix up your stadium or do you just like, I mean, if I'm a player, I don't even care at that point.
Well,
I'd rather have a nice locker facility, training, all that stuff. And I'd just be like, yeah, this is our stadium. Let's embrace it. Call it the junkyard. I don't care. This kid, you know, G-Fed, go crazy, embrace this and just be like, yep, this is what we are. We can't.
Dan, I think the UMass stadium is worse than Sam Houston Stadium. As I'm looking at photos, Sam Houston Stadium does look like a high school stadium. It reminds me of a high school stadium, but it is at least like built down in a bowl where you can sit on the hills and like the grassy hills. It's kind of cool.
I like a good bowl. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of cool.
That's good. That's, you know, I'm trying to think of other stadiums I've been to that were,
I don't know. That's not too good. I mean, this is really a bad contest. You know, I can't
bad. Yeah, I mean, you know.
It's just like they didn't even build anything. They just dug a ditch.
They did, yeah.
Bearcat. Bearcat Stadium? What is this thing called? Bowers, Elliott T. Bowers Stadium?
That's. I wonder how the late Warren McGurk feels about having his name.
Former president.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Well, it says alumni, too. I feel partially, you know, I'm a little shamed myself. Bearcats, I mean, is that only one side? They got two sides to Bearcat, the Bowers Stadium? I don't know. Huntsville.
They got to have two sides, don't they?
Yeah, they have two sides.
Two sides? You sure?
One of them is very small. Very, very, very small. Yeah.
There really are some cathedrals out there. And then there's this.
Yeah.
Who's got the worst stadium? Mano.
I haven't been to Southern Miss in a long time, and they used to have really good teams there, but that stadium was pretty rough. They call it the Rock, and it's just kind of like a big, you know, concrete thing with concrete concourses and no frills, that's for sure. Maybe they've added some frills again. I haven't been there since probably like 2005 or something. But
Bowers Stadium barely has another side. It's just some bleachers they cut into the hill. Look at that. They got to play each other. They got to play each other. They got. I know. Good podcasting. Yeah. All right. What would you do if you were UMass? Pat Ford.
I like the idea of leaning into being called the junkyard. I mean, I would slap some paint on a few things. Put a logo up or two.
Nope.
I mean,
leave like construction tape out there. Way. Make it look like something. Listen, they've had the plan, and we're going to build a 45,000 seat modern stadium. It just happened to be drawn up in 1965, and they got around to it.
Well, see, yes, athletic director McGurk retired, and didn't that things stalled a little bit
when they start getting that Mac money, that distribution, that Mac money. they'll be piling on renovations. It'll be beautiful, Dan.
Oh, luxury boxes aplenty.
When it's late November and about 23 degrees out,
yeah.
And Buffalo's in town on a Tuesday night, you're going to have a bigger stadium. You are absolutely going to have a bigger stadium.
I will say, you know, they will fit into that Tuesday, Wednesday, Maction November scene of, you know, like 18 students huddled against the howling wind and a blizzard, you know.
Listen, you can either try to raise like, how much is a stadium? I mean, Northwestern's spending $800 million on its stadium. Now, it would not cost that much to build, but that's only like a 30-something thousand seater, right? It would cost at least half $1 billion to build a nice stadium, even in Amherst, Massachusetts. Well, I mean, that ain't happening.
Post-COVID construction pricing.
I know. Mm-hmm. That ain't happening. So you either do that, or you declare yourself the worst stadium in college football and call yourself the junkyard. And then make sure everything else is nice. Look at your locker room's nice. Like, bring it, Missouri. Come play on this rock pile. I mean, the field is fine. Who cares?
I mean, Missouri's going to play there. I cannot believe Missouri's going to play there. I looked at the Missouri schedule. We just talked about it. I saw UMass on there. Didn't even look where it was because I assumed it was in Columbia.
Yeah. No, Mizzou, they played at UConn. They played at UMass. They played at Memphis, several other places.
UConn Stadium is much nicer, but it is forlorn because it's just sitting by itself in this lot in East Hartford.
Like, yeah, at least this is 30 miles from campus or whatever.
Yeah, at least this is on campus and it's like a beautiful area. Yeah. Anyway.
I hope to see you tailgating there at some point this season, Dan. At McGurk. at the junkyard.
The junkyard. Take it. Let's go. Embrace it. Put out a thing that you're proud to be called the worst stadium in college football. I have an identity. It's all about really brand.
They really should embrace that nickname, the junkyard.
The junkyard is a good name.
Put some broken down cars around it, maybe. Yes. Bags of trash.
That's what I'm saying. Like a burning pile of, like...
Yeah, solid. Fires in some trash cans. At
yeah,
various
construction
points, yeah.
tape, perfect. Like all sorts of stuff. Dare you into the junkyard. fans can like smash like a sledgehammer against the Eastern Michigan comes out with the sledgehammer, right? Like knock through a wall.
Yeah.
They could get an old car out there and just smash the car hood.
I mean, Eastern Michigan, they leaned into the point their field is gray.
And they call themselves the factory.
The factory, yeah.
Like, is that exciting?
Yeah. Yes.
I know, but like you wouldn't think it normally, but like this looks like a gray factory. Well, just go with it.
Yeah. All right. That's you've won my plan. Me over. The junkyard it is.
The junkyard.
That's, you know what? Yes, you got to be proud of whatever is getting your attention, or even if people are making fun of it on campus. Speaking of which, look at this shirt I'm wearing today.
Oh, wow.
Look at there, the people Morgantown. Mover, the rapid transit thing at West Virginia.
Perfect.
It's got a t-shirt. What's, yeah, I got one too.
Yeah.
I got one too. We got a gift from friend of the pod, Deep Morgantown.
That's sent us
those.
I'm going to visit there for a fall camp, you know, at some point, and I'm going
to
ride the train.
You got
maybe with a drink from one of the dive bars.
Give us a firsthand report.
Yeah.
All right. Recruiting.
Uh-oh.
I know.
It's July 8th, I guess. There you go.
They're all making picks, man. There are a lot of picks are in. These are initial selections, of course. A lot of top 100 picks over July 4th weekend. Rivals, 68 of the top 100 on Rivals have picked. They're going to 21 different schools, which I find notable. It should be above. We'll see where it ends up. Kind of hard to project with recruiting, but that could be more than they used to. 25 of 73 top 100 recruits in the 24/7 composite are going to, they're going to 25 different schools. 73 recruit commits, 25 of them are going to different schools. We've heard Ohio State, Oregon is loading up. They had a huge weekend with a whole bunch of five stars. People are saying Phil Knight's trying to buy a team before he moves on. How do you say this nicely?
I was wondering how you were going to phrase that. Made a pause. You gave just enough pause to get me thinking, this is going to be good.
Phil Knight would like to win a national title.
Before he moves on.
Before he moves on to the big swoosh in the sky.
I think he's 86. Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
I think he's at least 86. Yeah.
You can't wait for the UMass to finish its football stadium. Let's just put it that way. No. Neither can any of us. But
before he moves on, like he's going from second to third grade.
Apologies.
You're going, the euphemisms like they use in when they fire coaches. New Mexico is moving on from coach so and so. Yeah, no, you're firing him. In this case, moving on is not being fired.
Rutgers. We talked about Rutgers recruiting recently. I told you. They keep landing four stars. They're now 13th on the Rivals list. They'll probably drop later, but a whole bunch of four stars, including a bunch in state. SMU. They bought their way into the ACC, and now they're landing some recruits. This flipped a QB from TCU. Iron skillet flip. You get in the iron skillet, they flip it. Boom, you're on the other team. Sonny Dykes knows about that. He did that. They're doing pretty well. But the one I wanted to do a brief topic on was USC. They had a whole bunch of guys early. In the last month, they lost two five-star defensive linemen from Georgia, a four-star safety from Jacksonville, and Juju Lewis, their star quarterback, has been flying around the country posing for – we talked about him recently when he and Shador Sanders did a photo shoot where Shador was handing over the keys to the Colorado Buffs, while Juju sat in a Colorado-themed throne. Fantastic. If you're USC, you can't be feeling really good about this recruiting situation. You've got Lincoln Riley in the fold. You're heading to the Big Ten, and you now have all this Big Ten money, and you're not paying calimony like UCLA. And recruiting is not spinning really well. I'll spare Ross a little bit of the recruiting talk, but Pat, your thoughts on this?
Oh, it's fascinating. It is, because I think we all anticipated Lincoln Riley absolutely crushing it at USC, and it hasn't fully played out that way so far on the field, or now, as we're seeing, off in recruiting. And, you know, one of the things that maybe a flaw in strategy here, they've gone heavy into the Southeast, and that's who's decommitting from them. You mentioned a couple guys from Georgia, a guy from Jacksonville, Juju Lewis is from Atlanta. If you're going to go into SEC territory, it's tough to get them. I mean, you may get initial commitments, but when the heat comes back at the end of, hey, you know, we can do this for you, we can do that for you, you can stay home, you can play in the SEC, that's tough for a lot of these guys to turn down. You can get some of them, but given where USC is in California, you would think that they could do very, very well with recruits that they could actually keep there and be able to build a nationally competitive program. So, you know, I wonder if this is a case of maybe reach exceeding your grasp and them trying to go further than maybe they should have. We'll see how it plays out. They may still end up being fine on signing day, and then even more importantly, whenever the portal goes back into action. But for now, definitely some interesting, unexpected turbulence for Lincoln.
Very unexpected. You guys remember there was a few stories have come out the last 6-8 months or so about USC's NIL collective. Some parents had, I think, publicly voiced their disappointment maybe in payments or lack thereof. So I'm sure that has not helped. We're going to look back at, we talked about this plenty, but you know, we're going to look back at the NIL era and look at all this crazy these promises that were broken, and that's a place that apparently had happened the last few months.
Guardrails. I don't know. This is they're ranked 22nd. They actually got to get some guys. A lot of kids in California are uncommitted for some reason. The California kids are not committing yet.
Yeah.
So we'll
see. They could finish well.
USC, you wanted, as both USC and the Big Ten, you expected this to be the program to come roaring in with a lot of momentum. And it isn't happening right now. And that is, who knows? Oregon is roaring into the Big Ten with a lot of momentum. So that's a huge
one. And as usual, Oregon recruiting well in California. That's how they kind of built the program, and they're extending it and continuing it now. Doesn't matter who the coach is at Oregon, you've got to be able to recruit California, and they have.
Last week when I talked about the spreading the ashes, or Nebraska had that plan to I know how to say it now.
Oh yeah, we got lectured on your pronunciation.
Columbarium. That's what they're called. It's columbarium. I got it all wrong. Many people wanted to let me know that. I heard from some funeral directors, some pastors, how to spell it. Columbarium. Anyway, you get your ashes and you bury it under the Nebraska Stadium. This yielded an incredible amount of feedback. I'm bringing this one up. This is an amazing story. I had no idea. As the story goes, a former player for Bear Bryant had a relative pass away, and they wanted to do the funeral at Bryant Denny Stadium, preferably during a game, but that was not allowed.
A funeral during a game,
it just means more, Pat. So
do you sell concessions at the funeral?
Sure. Many
you
people
go get a hot dog and popcorn and
after you have the little reception after.
Okay. Funeral. Okay. All right. Not during. You're not sitting there with your popcorn.
My sources on funerals in Alabama, deep coffin. I don't know. Anyway, they allowed this funeral to happen
6 feet deep
in a luxury box at Bryant Denny while the Tide were playing on the road. Mm. They were playing at Florida. And according to this reputable source, okay? They all gathered, watched the first half of the Tide Gator game, held the funeral at half.
Oh, come on.
And then watched the second half on TV.
Dan. Really?
This is what they're saying.
Just means more, Dan.
I have more details, but I don't want to out anybody. Just means more. So this is, they're kind of one step up on Nebraska. Road game funerals.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's next level. I have questions here. Like, was the deceased cremated, or did they take the body up, like, in the casket into the luxury box? Like, can you get one of those on an elevator and get it up to a luxury suite?
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, they had. It's an excellent question.
What about beloved, when they have we're gathered here to remember Uncle Slim. I know we're all a little disappointed that the Tide was a little flat in the first half, but let's stick to the business at hand here. Remember our dearly departed and hope for a better second half as well. Roll Tide.
They're running through us like a tin horn. Come on, Coach Saban. Worst funeral ever. The Tide did defeat the Gators that day, 31-29.
Yeah, tough game.
I think this is true because this is a pastor who told me this using another source pastor, and he went back and got more info for me from that pastor. Mm. So it had to be a double pastor making up the story. I want it to be true also.
Desperately.
Media bias. I want it to be true because I just, where's the funeral?
Yeah.
I don't want to go to a funeral. It's during the Tide game. I mean, I like the person, but not during. Well, don't worry. We're going to do it at the stadium. Watch the first half. Funeral. Second half, we'll get the stadium nachos. We'll get the ice cream in the little cup.
What if the eulogy's like running long and you run over the kickoff? Oh,
you can't.
No.
12 minutes.
I mean, that's, you know, 20 for the NFL, the band, 20 for college, yeah.
But 20 for college.
That, you know what? That's a good way to keep a service tight and tidy. Okay, we got to be done in time for kickoff.
Have one of those sideline reporters handle it, like, because they get their questions in quick as those guys try to run off.
That's right.
What'd you think of the dearly departed? We got to control the ball, all three phases. All right.
That is a very Alabama story.
I hope it's true. I have names. I know. I'm not going to.
If you can just check that.
If
one
they want,
for
I will reveal the names later. They're probably very proud of it. I just don't want to be wrong.
Yeah, but see if you can find out for us whether the physical body was there in a casket or if they had an urn with ashes.
Maybe it was just a memorial service. Like, do you have to wait for the road game? Like,
yeah.
And maybe it was just
a lot of issues there.
All right, I'll find out more.
Okay.
Tune in next episode for that. It's like a serial.
Huge cliffhanger right there.
Yeah.
That'll bring everybody back.
Not bad. All right. That's got to be our show. We will please subscribe, share us on social media. We'll be back. Big 12 media days beginning in Vegas. They're getting wild out there. We will talk to you later.